Now it's time for the Southern Cross.
Southern Cross is back, and with me and Lachlan in studio today is Pacific Media Centre Director Professor David Robey, who is talking about several controversial issues in the Pacific this week. How are you, David?
Well, great to be here. Thanks.
Yeah. So should we get into it? Over this past week, the West Papuan human rights defender, Rosa, how do you pronounce it?
Moiwent,
visited New Zealand. She was quite critical over both New Zealand's inaction over her country and lack of media coverage. Can you talk us through about
that? Well, basically, she thinks New Zealand's pretty slack, that we just don't really do anything about it. We just take the lead from Australia. We don't rock the boat. And it should be an issue that, as a small country, you know, we should be championing the cause, really. Mm. But New Zealand doesn't want to get offside with Indonesia, of course. And the irony is that there's an Indonesia sort of expo in Auckland this week, which is a sort of a major push on the Pacific, you know, sort of raise the profile of Indonesia and that sort of thing, which is a tremendous thing overall. But it's West Papua is the big problem for Indonesia. Anyway, so she said New Zealand's got to sort of stand up and do something about it, and even if Australia's not. And the longer that countries around the world don't really take a strong stand, it's going to be more and more difficult for human rights. And then she was also pretty critical of the media. And she said, well, look, you know, part of the problem is that the media are not just really raising
people don't
the issue,
know about it.
No,
yeah.
And she gave two sort of main reasons. And that is that, maybe journalists don't know enough, which is fair enough, I think it's the case. But the other reason is that, well, you can't easily get into West Papua, you know, even if you're a journalist based in Indonesia and so on. So it makes it really difficult. But I have to say, Michael did this wonderful interview, sort of it's on video on YouTube, and so people should have a look.
Yeah.
And I suppose, well, I personally, you don't really hear much about our relationship with Indonesia.
Does
the government see it as sort of quite an important one in the Pacific? Is that why we don't really want to rock the boat?
Well, no, we just take the lead from Australia. It's not really all that important for New Zealand, but it's going to become increasingly important. After all, you know, it's the biggest economy in Southeast Asia, and Australia takes it really, really, very seriously. So we've got to wake up and do something about it.
Yeah. So shall we move over to Tonga? This was on the news just before, if anybody's still listening, but moving away from political human rights to gender human rights, there has been an issue over last year's Miss Hailala Beauty Queen calling a spade in a public speech at this year's event in Tonga. What happened?
Well, this is really quite extraordinary, really.
Yeah.
She's known as Scarlo, and she actually sort of came out very, very strongly and said, you know, look, I've been subjected to all this and bullying and intimidation and by the officials, lack of support, lying, deceit, the whole works, you know. And sort of shocked everybody in the audience and so on. And then organisers and officials tried to get her off the stage. The Deputy Prime Minister, Simisi Sika, he sort of basically got the sound DJ and so on to raise the sound, try and drown her out and that sort of thing. So it was quite an extraordinary example of the bullying right there.
Yeah.
Anyway, I think she's incredibly courageous to come up with this criticism and so on. And it's actually pretty well gone viral, you know, lots of video clips at the event, and lots of news coverage over the last few days. We've got really good coverage in the region for this.
I just think it must have been really brave, because not that I've ever been involved in any sort of beauty pageant or know anybody that has, but I can imagine that the rules are like really quite strict, and that you are particularly being, because she won, didn't she? Was that right? Or she
was?
No,
year,
she, yeah.
She was the outgoer.
She was
sort of like giving a,
because I can imagine that they're given quite strict rules about what they have to say and what they can't, like, cannot do. So that's pretty.
They become cardboard cutouts.
Yeah. That's pretty full on.
And you were talking earlier about the sort of social media reaction to this. Has it been pretty big in the social media in Tonga?
Incredibly big, you know. And like, you know, TV went. Barbara Drever, the Pacific correspondent for TV One News. I mean, she had a really good compilation of a whole of the social media coverage, and that really got the sort of ball rolling around the story.
Now, are people mostly think that what she's done is a good thing, or has there been quite a bit of backlash to what she said and what she's done?
Oh, she's had a backlash, yes, yeah. Definitely. But most of what I've seen is actually it's been pretty supportive, you know. Mm. And even people involved in the beauty pageant industry in Tonga itself sort of saying, you know, we need someone to come out and say this, you know.
Oh, well, it's pretty amazing. Can't get over how brave that must be. But anyway, right, now, David, what's going on in Vanuatu? 6 Chinese nationals have been deported at the weekend without being accused of any crime in Vanuatu. Why is that?
Yes, well, this is an extraordinary story because really it's sort of showing, I know there's a lot of concern about China in the Pacific and influence in democracies and influence behind the scenes, not only with the media, with policies, but also the justice system and so on. And so this is one that's been unfolding over the last few days. So basically these 6 people, five guys and a woman, have not been accused of any kind of crime in Vanuatu. They're allegedly, or at least some of them are allegedly scammers or running some sort of scam scheme based in Vanuatu and aimed at China and so on. So the Chinese authorities want to call them back under the Chinese legal system. But the way it's done, you know, sort of the secrecy around it, the no charges and no right of legal advice for these 6 detained people until they were, you know, sort of shipped out of the country, well, flown out of the country, but by, you know, private chartered jet. And even the police, when they were escorted out to the aircraft, you had one Chinese police official and a Vanuatu official, and they weren't even in uniform, so the whole thing
very weird, very murky.
But the Vanuatu Daily Post is the main newspaper and Vanuatu had been a very courageous paper as well. And they're right onto it and have been really exposing what's going on and so on. So we've been covering that fairly fully as well.
Do you think is that something that happens often? Do you think that sort of being charged, sort of moved out, it all being a little bit sort of not certain what's going on, is that something that has happened before or is something that is likely to happen again?
There have been a few murky things in Fiji as well involving Chinese authorities and authorities being flown into the country and that sort of thing. But I think this example here in Vanuatu is probably the really one that's right on the nose sort of thing. And I guess a lot of people around the region are sort of getting really worried, you know. I mean, just how far is China going to go to interfere in sovereign countries in the region? Mm. Small countries, because it's got aid over a barrel. You know, China is the second largest aid donor now, and the not so much donor, but you know, they've got a lot of aid projects going, and it's fairly tied up, you know, with long-term repayment conditions and that sort of thing. So it is a big worry.
Yeah, seeing how that'll pan out in the future, I suppose. So let's move over to Tahiti. Big crowds marked the 53rd anniversary of the start of nuclear testing in France, which isn't sort of being celebrated these days. Why?
Well, it's a moment of mourning, basically. Mm. And you know, earlier on, there was the sort of the good things about nuclear testing in terms of the economy was boosted in Tahiti, and so a lot of the political leaders and many of the people sort of closed a blind eye, apart from people like Oscar Timmer, a pro-independence leader, who are really challenging this. But now it's so much, you know, people are just disgruntled with it all. And when they started the nuclear tests, the first one was actually back in July the 2nd in 1966. It was after when Algeria was fighting for its independence. Mm. And so France wasn't able to carry on doing nuclear tests anymore. But it wasn't going to carry them on in France. Hobart's on Ireland. No. So look for somewhere the most remote place, right down the south.
Middle of the
Pacific,
ocean.
Where nobody's going to be object, they thought. Mororoa and Whangatawha, so that's where 100, and there's this organisation called Association 193, and it's a sort of activist NGO collective, and they've taken the name from the number of French nuclear tests in the Pacific, 193 and so on. There's another group called Mororoa e Totoa, and that's particularly working around compensation for those Tahitian workers, you know, over the years that have now cancers and a lot of problems, you know, that have come through on the health side of things. And people feel that, well, yeah, okay, so France did all those nuclear tests, okay, they stopped them in 1996, but what about the legacy, you know?
Yeah.
What are they doing about that, you know? And so people are pretty upset about that. So,
not much of a celebration, more sort of a...
They come out and they even had all these mock coffins and things. And so it's a big affair, but it's definitely, you know, when it's a protest event and a warning.
Yeah, understandable. So let's move over to Papua New Guinea. The new police minister is making big waves. What's going on?
Well, this is an interesting case because the new police minister of the change of government just recently was Brian Kramer. Now, he was a long-standing opposition MP and probably the most savvy social media opposition, well, not any of the MPs, you know, really basically conducted all his political campaigning and so on. He's got two Facebook pages. One is his personal one as a member of parliament, but he also has another one which is devoted to investigative journalism, which is what he was doing a lot while he was an opposition MP. So, of course, one of the big areas that he was criticising a lot was the corrupt and, you know, incompetent police. And so he was made police minister when the change of government, when O'Neill was dumped and so on. And so Brian Kramer's now got more or less free hand to sort of clean things up a bit.
Does he
so
have big plans? Yeah, he has big plans to make those changes.
Yes,
and
so it's one of the first things he's done now. Well, he's been following due process, but he sacked the police minister Gary Barkey. And Barkey's not taking this very
well.
Very well at all. He says, okay, well, he's going to challenge it in court and that sort of thing. Most of the cabinet ministers will go to ground, you know, and that sort of thing in Papua New Guinea, but not Brian. So he's using his Facebook page again. Says, this is all rubbish, what Gary Barkey is saying. And so these are all the reasons why. So he's being a lot more transparent than we've generally been accustomed to with cabinet ministers in Papua New Guinea.
Yeah. It's interesting as well that whole use of social media, very important, I suppose.
Well, I think it's, it's particularly in the Pacific, because most mainstream media is not really trusted.
No.
So people look to social
media to see what people are saying. Well, thank you so much, David. You can read all about the Pacific Media Centre updates at asiapacificreport.nz. And we will see you next time.
That was the Southern Cross.